Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Maura Murray disappeared on Monday, February 9th, 2004. When a person disappears without a trace, often the most critical information is hidden in their actions and words from the days before they vanished. Maura Murray's last known whereabouts may hold the clues to what happened to her.
I thought everything was okay.
Maura Murray is a 21-year-old college student. It seems like she has everything going for her.
They were talking of getting married.
She was on the dean's list.
But the mysterious events surrounding the days before her disappearance puzzle those who know and love her.
I don't have the slightest idea what was in her mind.
She leaves her dorm room in Massachusetts and drives to the next state. Nobody knows where she is headed.
I don't know why she came to New Hampshire. I don't know. I'd be guessing the same with everybody else.
When her car veers off this dark and windy highway, she seems to disappear into thin air.
Our Maura is gone. It was like a nightmare.
It's Saturday morning, February 7th, 2004. Fred Murray is driving to pick his daughter Maura up from the University of Massachusetts, Amherst. Little does he know that in only 3 days, she will disappear.
When Maura got to UMass, I'd go up there once a month or so. In fact, the last weekend I saw her, I was up at UMass and we went searching to find a car. So get her a car, you know, to go to do her nursing clinical trips and stuff like that.
21-year-old Maura Murray has juggled a busy college schedule, running track and cross country, and working two part-time jobs. Besides studying, she must do work for her nursing degree that requires long drives from campus.
Now, Maura had a car with her in Amherst, but the car was falling apart. It was really time for her to get a new car.
Maura's rundown car will figure prominently in her disappearance 3 days later.
And we had one picked out, and we're going to go up the next weekend and get it. But that didn't happen. It would have been safe. I wish I had bought it that weekend.
According to Fred Murray and Maura's friends at the time at UMass, it seemed to be a pretty normal weekend. Her father was visiting. Everything seemed fine.
And that night in Amherst, we went to the Amherst brew pub and had supper. Whenever we went to some place, especially if it's a college town or something like that, if we could find a brew pub, we would go to it, you know.
But the events of that weekend would create a mystery even her closest friends can't explain.
Maura and I grew up in a small town called Hanson, Massachusetts. We had a tight group of friends, and we stayed close all the way through high school and into college and always stayed in touch.
There was seven of us that
were always together. If something was really bothering Mara, she definitely would have come out and one way or another hinted at something was wrong.
The last time we hung out with Mara, everything seemed totally normal. We didn't notice anything different with her.
Mara's life seems to be on the right track, both at school and with her family. Her friends know Mara is particularly close to her father.
The first basketball team Mara and I played on, our dads were both coaches. Mara and our dad were very close growing up. She lived with her mom, but her dad was here picking her up for practices, bringing her to games.
Her parents divorced when she was 6 years old, and she remained living with her mother, but she maintained a very close relationship with her father.
It seemed like the last weekend Mara and her dad had spent together was pretty typical of their relationship.
After enjoying their brewhouse dinner that Saturday night, Fred lets Mara borrow his new car. She drops him off at his motel. Then the weekend takes a sudden and unexpected turn.
Sunday morning, Mara woke me up. She had come back, you know, during the night and told me that she had had an accident in my car.
She was involved in an accident in Hadley, Mass., where she went off the road and struck a set of guardrails. She was driving her father's new car at the time and did about $10,000 worth of damage.
Well, Mara was upset, and it haunts me, but, you know, I think she felt she let her father down.
At 4:49 a.m. Sunday morning, a distraught Mara calls her long-distance boyfriend, Billy Rausch, who is stationed in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. Billy later shares the conversation with his mother, Sharon.
So she calls Billy, and he talked with her, he calmed her down, and then he promised her that he would call her back later in the day.
Mara and Billy have been dating since 2001. They met while both were attending West Point.
From the moment I met her, I knew that she loved my son, you know. And, of course, that endeared her to me.
When Mara decided to transfer from West Point to UMass, Billy and Mara continued their relationship, spending many holidays and summers with Billy's family.
By the time that she was here over the holidays in 2003 and early 2004, they shared that, you know, they were talking of getting married.
I think Mara looked at Sharon as if she was a second mom. She always went out there and we knew that she was excited to go.
To describe Mara is a challenge. I don't want to say she's complex, but she was so multifaceted, you know? She could be serious. She could be so funny and witty. She always had this little soft giggle. And she was very soft-spoken, but she was fun-loving. She loved life. She loved to laugh.
The next day, when Fred Murray sees his daughter, she's still upset about the accident.
I drove her back to the dorm. I could see she was still upset. I told her it would be all right. It was going to be covered. It would be okay, you know? And she went into the dorm, and that's the last I ever saw of her, which haunt me forever, ever.
A few hours later, at 11:26 p.m., Mara speaks on the phone with her father one final time.
Checked on my insurance. I called her back, said, you know, we're okay. The insurance will be taken care of, so I'm not going to be out a lot of money. I said, you're going to have to make out accident reports, probably in triplicate. So get the three forms from the police station or wherever you have to get them, and call me tomorrow night, you know, 8 o'clock.
But Mara's call to her father will never take place. And her actions will surprise everyone who knows her.
There was no death in the family. She did lie.
In the weekend before she goes missing, UMass nursing student Mara Murray has been in an accident after borrowing her dad's car. But her father thinks that crisis is past.
The car would get fixed, and my insurance would cover it. And so Mara's all right, so I figured if this is the most trouble this kid ever causes me in 21 years, then I am lucky. I'm a lucky guy.
But what Mara does later that night, she doesn't share with her father or any of her friends.
We had an opportunity to look at some of the files on her computer. She had looked at some sites specific to rental properties in the White Mountains region of New Hampshire. She finished up working on her computer at about 4 a.m.
Mara continues her online search the next day.
It appears she got back on her computer on the afternoon of the 9th, and during the course of a couple hours, searched several sites to include getting directions from Amherst, Mass., to the Burlington, Vermont area.
Here she was looking for different directions up to New Hampshire and I think onto Burlington, Vermont. I mean, it would seem a little strange, especially since classes had just started.
No one knows what Mara was planning the day before she disappears, but her last cell phone calls leave clues.
We have Mara's cell phone records because her cell phone was an additional line to Billy's cell phone. So, you know, Billy not only gave her a phone for Christmas, he paid the monthly bill. When his bill came, then, you know, we automatically saw all the calls that she made.
At 12:55 p.m. Monday, February 9th, 2004, Mara calls the owner of a Bartlett, New Hampshire condo rental. Her father recognizes the town. It's a place Mara knew well.
She was going to Bartlett. There's no question. She was going to Bartlett, and that's what she knows, she's familiar with. She stayed in every place in Bartlett. She can get a room there. And even if she can't, she knows other places. Mara has been coming up here since she was born.
Mara grew up every summer and parts of winters and springs and falls going all up through New Hampshire. She's hiked so many of those mountains up there with her dad.
They wanted to do the highest mountains as best they could, and she loved hiking.
Mara's friends know her to be very athletic, excelling at many sports.
Mara played just about every sport possible growing up. Mara and I were always on the same teams, and we were captains of the cross-country team senior year. But she was always the one leading the pack and winning most of just about all of the races, and including doing top finishes in the state.
She was recruited to West Point for her running abilities.
After transferring from West Point, she attended the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where she ran track and cross-country. Back at her dorm room that February afternoon, just hours before her disappearance, Mara sends an email to her boyfriend.
He did receive an email from her that day, around 1 or 1:30, and in that email, she told him that she loved him and that she was sorry she hadn't returned his messages from the day before. She hadn't felt like talking to much of anyone.
Whatever Mara's state of mind is, she makes a number of phone calls that afternoon.
Mara made another phone call to 1-800-GO-STOW, which is a reservation phone line for hotels in the Stowe, Vermont area. But research shows that at the time that Mara called, the line was actually out of order. So Mara could listen to listings for different hotels, but she could not actually make a reservation on this line. But that just shows that Mara, again, was looking for a place to stay in the Vermont, New Hampshire area.
Then, 13 minutes after phoning the Go Stowe hotline, Mara calls her boyfriend, but gets his voicemail.
She didn't say much other than promising to call him. Sorry she missed him.
Mara hasn't told anyone she's thinking about leaving town. She finally shares her plans, but it's not with anybody close to her.
Mara had sent an email to her nursing professors. I don't know word for word, but in it, she told them that she needed to be away for a week due to a death in the family.
Her friends know there has been no death in Mara's family.
We thought it was a little bizarre when we first heard that Mara had sent an email to professors saying, there's a death in the family, I have to take off for a week.
Not really like her, but if something was going on, she did need to get away, then kind of explains it. Why she didn't call one of us, I don't know. I mean, maybe we could have helped her out, figured something out together.
She did lie, but, you know, Mara was not a liar.
Around 3:30, we assume Mara got into her car at UMass Amherst and left the campus. Her first stop was to an ATM machine where she withdrew $280. That pretty much depleted Mara's account with that bank. Mara then stopped at a local liquor store. At the liquor store, Mara bought a bottle of Kahlua, a bottle of Bailey's, a bottle of vodka, and a box of red wine.
Mara's stop to the liquor store is known because the receipt of what she purchases is later found in her wrecked car.
Kahlua, Bailey's, and vodka are known for making a white Russian. No one understands why Mara bought such a large quantity of alcohol for if she was traveling alone.
There was surveillance camera at the ATM, so we could see still photographs where she walked up to the ATM, withdrew the money, and there didn't appear to be anybody in the background or anywhere that we could see from the camera photos.
It's 4:37 p.m., and phone records show Mara checks her voicemail. This is the last known call from Mara's cell phone. Presumably, at this point in the afternoon, she's now driving towards New Hampshire.
She had an extremely adventurous sense of spirit. When we first heard that Mara had taken off and gone up to New Hampshire, it seemed a little odd to us, but not totally, because I remember a day in high school that she decided she just wanted to go off and do something different, so she hopped on the train herself, went to Boston, didn't necessarily tell us, but by the end of the day, she was back after all of us had been spending the whole day trying to track her down.
The next day, Mara's father will hear the worst news of his life.
Your daughter's missing. She's in an accident. The police don't seem to know where she is.
It's Monday afternoon, February 9th, 2004. Momentarily, this 21-year-old nursing student will go missing. It seems she's planning a getaway, but connecting the clues is complicated.
As to why Mara left, I don't know. In my position as father, you would think that maybe there would have been something said, but I have no hint. I thought everything was okay. You know?
Some think perhaps Mara is not doing well at school, and that's why she's leaving.
I wasn't aware of any stuff like school troubles. She was on the dean's list in a very difficult program, a nursing program. Hard to get in, hard to do well in.
When it came to academics, she was always very serious and one of the top members of our class by the time we all graduated.
The recipients this year are the 5 top-ranking students in the senior class. The awards are $400 to Mara Murray.
I think everybody felt that she was doing okay at school, but there also were some issues, I think, that were causing her great stress in her private life.
Around 5 p.m., Monday, February 9th, this Dean's List student is on the road, driving a rundown car hours away from her dorm, without telling anybody where she is going.
I knew she was having car trouble. We had gotten her a AAA membership with the long distance towing because we were concerned about her.
It was pretty cold. The road was slippery.
Fred Murray is tracing his daughter's last known steps.
She went west on, I would say, what is it, 116 to Route 91, which we're on now.
She's driving away from her UMass Amherst dorm towards New Hampshire.
She's going to take this right down until she finds 112 East. This is what she was looking for. I wish she had gone straight.
And after traveling over 140 miles...
Mara is not familiar with this area.
Around 7:30 p.m., her car veers off the road.
Mara came around the corner, and so the car wasn't running properly. It impacted right down here. There was a big snowbank here. It's so dark here. If you're looking in this direction, you can't see your hand in front of your face.
This is Mora's second car accident in 3 days. a school bus driver stops to help her.
I just asked her how she was. She said she was shaken up. I couldn't see any blood on her face. And she was shaking like this. I says, okay, I'm going to go call the police.
Well, the bus driver told us she didn't appear to be hurt. He offered to call the police for assistance, and she really asked him not to. She said that she had called AAA, but it being in the location of the mountains, he also knew that there was no cell phone coverage there. So he was quite convinced that she hadn't been able to make that call. So he went home, which was a short distance down the road, and called the local police department.
Around 10 minutes later, at 7:45 p.m., police arrive at the accident scene, looking for any trace of the driver.
The police officer at the scene noticed that the windshield was broken in front of where the driver would be seated. The airbags had gone off. There was damage to the front end of the vehicle. When he got there, he found that there was nobody with the vehicle.
In the blink of an eye, this vivacious, athletic young co-ed disappears.
He noticed that there was a box of wine, like a 5-liter box of wine, behind the driver's side seat. He could see that through the window. He noticed in the snow what appeared to be something pink that had been poured into the snow. Subsequently, when they removed the vehicle, he found a Coke bottle, and it smelled like there had been an alcoholic beverage in that bottle.
I spoke with the one witness that actually talked to Mara Murray that night at the accident scene. That witness says that Mara appeared a bit shook up, but she did not appear intoxicated.
There didn't appear to be any evidence at the scene which would indicate anything other than she had left the scene under her own power. There wasn't any evidence of a struggle of any kind. The vehicle was locked.
The police officer at the scene of the accident searches the surrounding area. Mora is nowhere to be found.
Well, the initial accident investigation, you know, led the police officers to believe that this was simply a case of someone who had been involved in a motor vehicle accident and did not wish to, at least initially that night, have contact with the police.
The next day, police speak on the phone with Mora's family.
As a result of those conversations, they then became concerned that Mara might be depressed. Her father described it, that she was depressed in having crashed his car on Saturday night.
Fred Murray remembers receiving the shocking and mystifying news.
The way I felt was just like the world just stopped. Your daughter's missing. She's in an accident. She's in the woods, way up, and not in New Hampshire. The police don't seem to know where she is. I wanted to get up here immediately.
The next morning, Mora's boyfriend receives a strange voicemail message.
The message basically, in and of itself, was just a woman breathing and then possibly a whimper or some sort of noise at the end, which we believe to be her.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Janice from Warner Brothers Discovery. Spring is officially in bloom here in the Northern Hemisphere, and with a fresh season underway, you might be seeking your own transformation. For some, that means a new approach to weight loss or nutrition. Noom has a unique approach. Noom is tailored to each person's psychology and biology. It's built to meet you where you are because Noom understands that no two people are the same. Noom stands out to me because it offers a holistic approach to well-being. From coaching to recipes, Noom's app provides personalized information to help you on your journey. I also think it's great that Noom doesn't restrict what you can eat, and it doesn't shame you for treating yourself, and treat yourself you should. What's more, Noom believes in nourishing rather than restricting. Noom can help you lose weight while still enjoying your favorite foods, because this approach is about eating well and treating your body right. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your free trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
I don't know why she came to New Hampshire. I don't know. You know, I'd be guessing the same with everybody else.
It's Wednesday, February 11th, 2004. Fred Murray has just driven all night from his work in Bridgeport, Connecticut, after hearing his daughter's car has been abandoned far away from her dorm room, and she is nowhere to be found.
I get up here at daybreak, you know, to join the search.
Maura's mother, Lori, is living a mother's worst nightmare. She's unable to leave her home in Hanson, Massachusetts to join the search due to a fractured ankle.
Eventually, you know, the rest of my family showed up, and Bill Roush, Mara's boyfriend, and his mother and father, Bill and Sharon, showed up.
But during his trip from Fort Sill, Oklahoma to New Hampshire, Mara's boyfriend Billy receives a mysterious voice message on his cell phone.
Billy called frantic. Around 7 a.m. on Wednesday morning. And he says, Mom, he said, while I was going through security, I missed a call. And he said, I'm sure it was Mara.
The message basically, in and of itself, was just a woman breathing and then possibly a whimper or some sort of noise at the end, which we believe to be her.
He said there was some, you know, really soft sobbing and shivering sounds and sniffing. And he said, I don't know what to do. He said, I called it back and it says it's a prepaid calling card.
They have hope the call is from Maura, since Sharon knows Maura uses prepaid calling cards.
Before Maura had her cell phone, she called Billy with prepaid calling card. And when Maura was here for Thanksgiving in 2003, I gave her two prepaid calling cards. And so that's always, you know, added to our belief that it's very likely that Maura made that very unusual call that Billy received that morning.
Once in New Hampshire, the family frantically searches for Maura.
So we found a place to stay locally, and we started setting up a kind of like a command central and making a lot of calls and trying to get some flyers together.
Well, what we're doing is we're working from the crash site, working out, and it's going to be encompassing about a half a mile radius to start. Again, we're looking for any sign, so had she gone into the woods, she had to have left some sign behind.
We got the state police helicopter up there the first thing the next morning to do a search from the air. I also had our bloodhound that's assigned to the troop respond and do a search of the ground.
The state police brought a dog, and the dog was given a glove, but it was a brand new glove that Maura had just gotten for Christmas. But if they had asked me, I'd have given them something that she used all the time, like running gear or something like that. But I don't know. Maybe she did wear it, but it was pretty new.
The dog followed the scent up to about here where the dog lost it.
The abrupt loss of the scent, over 100 feet away from the accident scene, leads to speculation that Mora may have gotten into a passing vehicle.
We did an intensive search of the crash scene area for evidence that she may have walked into the woods. Nothing like that was uncovered. Do police make mistakes? Do we miss things? Absolutely. We just want to make sure we're doing everything that we can to locate this missing girl and get her back to her family.
Police question Mora's boyfriend and speak with his parents.
After we arrived in Haverhill on Wednesday, Billy was questioned extensively. They gave us a press release.
Mora is described as endangered and possibly suicidal.
Well, in any press release, you want to let the public know, especially if you're looking for help. So you want to give those details so that someone who lives in the area or wherever will just be on the lookout for something out of the ordinary. So that information was included in the early press releases that she might be depressed and she may have come up here to harm herself.
So they proceed to tell us that there is no evidence of foul play. Mara is 21 years old. She is an adult. She has the right and the privilege to go missing of her own choice. We're thinking, oh, this can't be. She's gone. That's our foul play. Our Mara is gone.
And while her family and friends are trying not to lose hope,
Mora's loved ones are interviewed by the media. They hope to get the news of her disappearance out to the public in case someone, anyone, can help.
As long as I'm here, I want to use every minute. As long as it's still daylight, I want to be out there.
Driving east all the way to Maine, heading up north close to the Canadian border.
I'm getting more fearful by the hour. I'm scared and I'm desperate.
It's not something we want to dwell on, but we're keeping, you know, we're trying to stay logical and rational. And it just appears that someone more than likely picked her up with bad intentions.
I don't think she's able to contact us. There was no way that she would ever not contact us.
No matter what, they still cling to hope that somewhere out there, Mora may be listening.
Everybody's here looking for you. And just call any one of us and we'll come right down and get you. Don't be afraid, please.
I love you, Mora. I miss you so much. Obviously, you know that. And the sooner that I get to see you and be with you again, you know, obviously, the better.
So please, kid, if you're listening to me, we can just bang away at this stuff the same as we do all the time until we fix it.
Meanwhile, police search Mora's car, looking for some trace, some clue as to where she has gone.
Mara's belongings were released to Billy. Billy brought her belongings back to the motel on Friday, February 13th. She had her running clothes. She had a bag with her school books, which include her syllabus. So it shows every intent on doing her schoolwork while she was away. She had every intent on maintaining her, you know, her exercise regimen.
Also found in Mara's car was a book titled Not Without Peril. It was a book chronicling different hikers that had gone into the presidential range of New Hampshire's mountains, and they either never returned or they were badly injured.
Book Not Without Peril was in Mara's car because Mara and I climbed in Mount Washington, and when you read the book, it mentions all these different trails and all the different adventures, some ending happily, some ending in death. You know, people have frozen to death up there. But for the most part, it's uplifting.
Some people speculate, why was Mara reading this particular book, a book about hikers that go into the mountains and never return? But others say this was just one of Mara's favorite books.
With nothing to go on but hope, Mora's family is determined to continue looking for her. During their search, Mora's sister discovers a disturbing potential clue.
Women's underwear were found right down here, more on top of the ice than buried in it. We turned the underwear into the state police, but never heard another word.
There were some items of clothing that were turned into law enforcement. We did forensic testing on those and were able to determine that they were not, in fact, belonging to Mara.
after weeks of constant searching.
I've searched all down through here.
Devastated and exhausted, Maura's loved ones return home.
I personally search any place that would have, that would be significant to her, that would be meaningful, that we went to a lot, that would be special for Maura, but she hadn't been to any of those places.
But witnesses are about to come forward, including one who claims to have seen the young Maura Murray.
The young woman had her arms folded in front of her and seemed to be mouthing the words, "Help me."
In the days and months after that fateful February 9th, 2004, when his daughter disappears from the scene of her one-car accident, Fred Murray hopes for answers, even though there seems to be no leads and no suspects.
Fred, God has just really blessed him in giving him the strength. You know, at his age, he goes up there week after week after week, and he keeps searching the sides of the roads. He keeps searching the woods.
Months after Maura's disappearance, Sharon and Fred decide to do more follow-up, investigating Maura's final cell phone calls themselves.
It wasn't until Fred and I decided in the fall of 2004 that we were going to go back to square one and check some things out that I called these phone numbers.
Hello? I picked up the phone and it was Sharon. She had said that she obtained Maura's cell phone records and that I was one of the last people to speak with her and that she had gone missing.
Linda and her husband own a condo in Bartlett, New Hampshire. And Fred and Maura and Billy had stayed there in late summer of 2003. At the time that I learned this, I went online. And this condo by the Salamones was the least expensive to rent. So I'm confident that that is why that Maura chose that one.
This 12:55 p.m. call on February 9th, 2004, lasts 3 minutes. Unfortunately, Linda Salamone is unable to remember more about her conversation with Maura because she is contacted so many months afterwards.
I felt like I might have been able to help at that time if I had just received a phone call. I could have said, yes, she sounded distressed, or no, she was okay, and this is where she was heading, or whatever, any little bit. So then I felt very frustrated because I still, you know, felt I might have been able to help.
One thing Linda is sure of, she didn't rent a condo to Maura that week.
There was no way for her to get in. We would have to give her the keys. We would make sure that we knew who we were renting it to.
Fred Murray is frustrated with the lack of progress in the case.
Fred has also filed a lawsuit against the State Police of New Hampshire and the local police of New Hampshire, trying to obtain the records, the documents pertaining to the Maura Murray case.
My only relief would be the FBI coming in or getting the release of the case records myself. And neither one's going to happen because the court system backs up the state police.
Court decisions have ruled that records relating to the case cannot be released to the public, stating it would interfere with future law enforcement proceedings.
At some point, we may get that piece of evidence which says that she was the victim of a crime. And in solving that case, you want to be able to have everything that you've done from the beginning to that point forward admissible in court if you have to go to trial.
To add to the mystery and the frustration, reporter Maribeth Conway says she spoke to a witness who says she actually encountered Maura Murray, looking very distressed.
She saw a young woman with an older man, a man probably in his 60s. The young woman had her arms folded in front of her and seemed to be mouthing the words, "Help me." The woman finally realized what was happening, but before she really had a chance to do anything about it, the young woman and the man left. The woman did not get license plate numbers or any further of a description of this young girl. She swears that this young woman is Mara Murray.
We've had reported sightings of Mara in Rochester, New Hampshire, in Vermont, in other states. We've always determined that it was not, in fact, Mara.
The interesting thing about the Mara Murray case is that there are so many theories still to this day. Mara was possibly suicidal. She was possibly running away. She could also have been kidnapped.
When the press releases came out about her being suicidal and all the other absurd theories, it was very hard to read. I mean, yeah, people can think what they want, but those that know her know that she was a happy person.
There's no evidence of suicide. You're talking about a kid full of life with every possible thing to live for. She's getting out of nursing school. She's going to have a great job. She's getting ready to get married, got a whole future.
You know, when Mara went missing, there were many things that were said. You know, one of the things was that, well, you know, Mara has run off with another boyfriend. And Billy, you know, was confronted with this, and he said, I hope she has. You know, if she is with another young man, then she is safe.
I think we never thought it would go past a few days. We just thought eventually she'd turn up and there'd be answers, and maybe she'd have a great story to tell after the fact. Some adventure happened. Never thought that 4.5 years later, 5 years later, we'd just have more questions than answers. So this is Mara's last email to the group of girls.
Mara's friends feel her last email to them proves she was not planning any sort of long-term getaway.
She writes, Dane Cook is playing at UMass, and we went to get tickets and it was sold out. I missed out again. But I did some research and he plays in Storrs, Connecticut, February 12th, not two from UMass. She points out that it's February 12th, so it would be 3 days after she actually went missing. So to me, it shows that that's not someone who was trying to take off permanently. She wouldn't just make plans and then completely ditch them in our minds.
We don't really know what happened to Mara. And though we learn more and more all the time, we don't seem to be able to solve this mystery.
To date, we haven't been able to come up with that answer. But it's certainly my hope, and I know the investigators working on this case, that we will one day have the answer for the family. Because I can't imagine what it's like not to know what happened to your daughter.
I think some local dirtbag grabbed her. And she was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
In our minds, one of two things had to have happened to Mara that night. And that was either she succumbed to the elements, which is possible, or someone harmed her. Because we are convinced that with the items that were packed in her car and the fact that there was no note, she was not planning on taking her life.
As the days have turned into months, and the months into years, Mara's closest friends still have trouble accepting the reality of her disappearance.
She's missing everything. I mean, we graduated from college, and she missed it. We don't have any more pictures of her. It's hard.
It's just hard to put into words. It's just one of those things you hear in the news or read about, but you just never assume that something would happen to you or one of your friends. Clearly, it's been 4.5 years and the emotions are still here.
We don't want Mara to be gone. We want her to be out there starting a new life. But we have to face ourselves in the mirror and deal with what we know, the facts that we know. And now, after, all of this time, it's not just our minds that tell us that something has happened to Mara. It's our hearts, too.
However heart-wrenching the answer is, Mara's father refuses to give up searching for his daughter.
I'm going to be up here all the time. I'm going to follow up any lead that a local gives me. I'm trying to do everything I can do. My conscience wouldn't, I wouldn't be able to stand myself if I didn't. I wouldn't be able to look at a picture of Mara if I knew that I wasn't doing everything I could possibly do. You know, it's just whatever time I have left, that's what I'm going to do with it. She was my buddy, you know, and I don't have my buddy. I'm just my buddy.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.